Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
That is right. We are who you thought we were. If you know us, I guess. And if you don't, you are now listening to the Next Fan Up podcast. It is the podcast by the fans, for the fans. I am the Kansas City Chiefs superfan, and I am joined here by a really thick cadre of fellow superfans. We're going to be breaking down some of the latest free agency news, talking about some of those guys that are still hanging out there and might still be able to help a team. And then we'll be diving deep into our own teams and our varying levels of joy and angst at what our own beloved franchises are up to. But so let's go straight into who we have here on the line. We have Dan, our Colts superfan. How is your cigar, Dan?
Oh, it's glorious. It's a Ditka cigar, so I'm taking it down like I normally do with the Bears. So it's a good day.
Sounds like you're having a good day. And we're also joined by Blast from the Past, our former and current and emeritus recap host, Mark, our former Eagles superfan, who we just can't let him go. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing good, Nick. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. And
Mark.
And we have the team that that was jumping across the line as soon as the first crack of the pistol for free agency. We have Ryan, our Jag super fan. How are you doing down there in your in the stadium pool, Ryan?
I definitely wish I was there right now. Instead, I'm in my Las Vegas home, which is where I live. But I'm doing great. Good time to talk Jaguars football always.
Yeah, offseason is always the best time to be talking Jaguars football.
Yeah.
But in terms of a team where it would at least seem that the light is getting brighter, I mean, a team that definitely made some ambitious moves, we have our Texans super fan, James. What's up, James?
Oh, not too much, Nick. Overcoming the loss of my Purdue Boilermakers to Michigan State, but that's college basketball and doesn't count as a sport right now.
Boiler down.
Yeah, enough of that. Don't be getting your basketball over my football. This is not the time for that. Like I said, if you're just listening to this for the first time, there's tons of content you're probably missing out on. If you haven't seen our Facebook page, you can find us by just typing Next Fan Up into the search bar on Facebook. There you'll see actually all of our off-season to-do lists for all of our teams. And we've also been running quite a bit of content out of our Twitter page, which is just at NFU Podcast. We've been previewing our upcoming Superfan Super Mock Draft by putting out polls and letting you, the fans, give us an idea of what you guys think each of these teams should do. In our mock draft, we're going to be all putting on GM hats and going through the full draft as if we were actually running our franchises. And in a lot of cases, things would be much better if we were. But such is life. And you can also email us if you want to join us, because there are actually several superfan spots open. So email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. Give us your ideas of which direction your team should be going and a bit of why you are and should be considered a superfan. But so just to jump into the little bit of news we've had, the guys on Thursday covered it great. You know, not only the great Pod Vader and all the dudes who were able to be there for that, but we had Matt Williamson even giving his thoughts on it, and they did a great job breaking it down. But there are a few signings since Thursday, it's small stuff like Chris Conte to the Bucks on a 1-year deal. We had Robert Ayers signed with the Bucks as well from the Giants. And Gerald Freeman also to the Bucks. Any thoughts on those deals, guys?
Well, Freeman went to the Bears actually, and as a Colts super fan, I'm pretty disappointed that it doesn't even sound like they offered him anything worthwhile. Like it sounded like he wanted to come back to the Colts, and if they would have given him, a pretty simple deal, he would have came back to the Colts. And now he leaves another big hole in the Colts defense, which is kind of a big deal since it seems like New England just runs it down their throat every year. So I don't know why they didn't go after a pretty good linebacker in Freeman.
And Chris Conte is, as far as I understand, pretty much hot garbage. So I don't know. Bears fans just cannot stand him because he used to be a safety there. And I don't know how he was with the Bucks, but that was pretty much his MO. So I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like you guys are sitting on quite a bit of money, and obviously we'll get into your team a bit more in depth a bit later. But why haven't we seen the Colts be a little more active?
You know, that's a good question. The big news for me was that they signed Dwayne Allen here in free agency. Let Kobe Fleener walk to New Orleans, but Casey Hayward would have been a great addition that they could have added, and Freeman would have been a great way to. Or been some, it would have been a good opportunity for him to come back to the Colts, but it seems like there's been some good mid-level free agents that have, to me, screamed, "Hey, Indy should add them," and they haven't. So I'm a little confused as to why they haven't looked at that, especially the mid-level free agent class, to bolster their defense down. I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, you mentioned Casey Hayward. That was one of probably the biggest deal that we saw over the weekend, which was he signed a 3-year $15.3 million deal with the Chargers, which I'm not happy about because he was a guy I had a jersey waiting for, and also I'm not going to enjoy having him be playing for a rival. But was there anybody else among you guys that were also hoping to snag him?
He would have been a great cornerback, too, down in Indy, but apparently that's the only place he would have fit in other than San Diego.
He's a really, really good player, but the Jaguars just signed a cornerback, so that's why I didn't chime in there. And I say really, really good. I don't mean to emphasize that. He's a good player that could have been signed and not for a crazy amount of money. Always liked him in Green Bay, but just as for a specific team, I don't think he would have fit right now in Jacksonville.
No. Well, and it seems like the biggest news that is still out there is not even so much signings, but reports and rumors and all this back and forth and the leaks between the various agents and front offices about the quarterbacks that are still out there. I mean, we've now gotten to the pure musical chairs stage of free agency, it seems like, particularly when it comes to the quarterbacks. For any team that is looking for a quarterback, you have Fitzpatrick out there. You have Kaepernick, who apparently is available via trade. RG3 is a free agent, and the Broncos have even started talking about Mike Glennon. As a team that just reached out and re-signed their quarterback, what do you think about this crop of guys that is out there, Mark?
I'm really interested in Fitzpatrick, maybe of all of them, and what that might happen. I can't believe that he isn't. I'm hoping that he'll be able to close the gap, as we were talking about earlier before we were on here, of what he's expecting money and the Jets are they expect to pay him, because he was playing really well for them last year. That seemed to be a good thing going. I'm not saying he's a great quarterback. He is way too old and all of that, but why not, let him go for a couple more years there, see if Geno can further develop and if what they want to go in that direction. So I guess that's I'm just very curious of why that isn't happening. I guess it is just a difference in what they expect in money, but why they haven't done that deal. I personally don't like Kaepernick at all. I'm not saying he's worthless or anything, but he's very similar to RG3 to me, where it's like, yeah, if you want to run that kind of a, read action, read option off of the edge, kind of an offense, sure, those guys have some value there, but clearly we've seen in the NFL, that's not going to go all the way. And when you look at someone like Cam Newton, who can do that and way better than either of those guys, he also can throw the ball from the pocket and make some really incredible throws that I don't think either of those guys are capable of making. And then also Cam makes really good decisions, which I think is the biggest thing those two quarterbacks are not capable of doing. They just don't process well. Definitely not RG3. I mean, I may be wrong, but what Gruden was saying about him in their press conference with the 1 year they had to go together. Gruden was saying, like, he would literally read the wrong side of the field. He'd hike the ball. The idea was he has to read the left side, and he'd read the one. That's crazy that a player in the NFL is that off the mark. Two, that when your coach is telling the media that, I mean, that just shows it's really a problem. He's not trying to protect him at this point, because it's just obvious he's not going to get it mentally. And there were just times with Kaepernick, seeing him throw and hit like water boys and stuff. I don't know. Those two quarterbacks, I was so scared of either of them ending up in Philly. I kind of knew that wouldn't happen without Chip, because obviously everyone thinks Chip wants a running quarterback, which I don't think is true. But that was the only way I could see them in Philly, so I'm glad they're not. But yeah, you mentioned another quarterback. Who else is out there? Who else are we even thinking about?
Well, the Broncos are now talking about Glennon. At least there's reports that they're thinking about making a move for him.
I mean, they signed Sanchez, so I mean, sure. Sanchez, right. I'll take Glennon, sure.
Sanchez is the answer. Well, just one more thing on Fitzpatrick before I get some thoughts from some of the other guys. Is that because Andrew, our Jet Super fan, messaged me before this. We were hoping to have him on, but he wasn't able to make it. But he says, and I quote, "The Jets have played the Fitzpatrick negotiations perfectly. I would rather have RG3 and Geno compete in Gailey's system than pay Fitz $16 a year. The Jets know nobody else is going to give him that money, and they represent him the best situation for Fitz with the wideouts and the offensive coordinator they employ." I mean, I get what he's saying here, but I just think, I mean, look, Fitzpatrick proved last season that he is a competent starting quarterback who can actually put up some good numbers for you. I mean, he's gonna make some mistakes and things like that. He's not great, but guess what? The market this year, as we have seen, the market for a competent starting quarterback is in the high teens. That's just what it is. I mean, maybe 16. I mean, even that, they might not be able to drag him down to. But you're just not going to be able to pay him, you know, 10, 7, 12 million a year. I mean, that's the only guys that are making that and are actually starting for their teams are guys that are still on rookie deals or that were brought in as backups that outperformed. I mean, it was like we went through the list a few weeks ago, and it was guys like Brian Hoyer. And so guess what? I mean, as somebody was saying, as actually Sam, who we're going to hear from in the future. I mean, look, like, wouldn't you rather just be paying your quarterback probably $3-4 million more than you think he's worth than to not have one? I mean, I don't know what the plan is there without Fitz.
Nick, I completely agree with you. And our boy Hirsch with the Jets is usually on point. But I got to disagree with him. I think Fitzmagic was just such a perfect fit for the Jets. If I recall correctly, just like on Twitter, following some sports host who's a Jets fan, like, he mentioned the best seasons in just Jets history or even the best quarterbacks. And honestly, Fitzpatrick is way up there. You know, he didn't win a Super Bowl like Namath, but this team almost got to the playoffs with Fitzpatrick there. I remember last year I was kind of worried for them because he, you know, you never quite know what you'll get with him because he is prone to turnovers, but really all season long, he was much better at taking care of the ball until that last game when it really mattered, I guess you could say, but they still went 10-6. I think he's a perfect fit there. I don't like the idea of saying, let's go with Geno and whoever else and hope something happens. Like, I understand it's too much to pay Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I know James used to have him on the Texans, so he might know something more about him, but just with the success that they had, I think it will just be a bad move if the Jets don't end up with Fitzpatrick as their starter again this season.
Did he give a price point, Nick? When he said he doesn't want to pay 16, did he say what he does want to pay?
I don't know. I mean, in earlier conversations with him, he brought up, like, you know, also low, like, I think 12 was the number, but I don't remember. But it was like either low teens or high single digits. And actually, interestingly, that's been reported to be part of the hangups with a potential trade situation with Kaepernick in Cleveland, is that the Cleveland Moneyball guys say that he's actually worth somewhere around $8 or $9 million a year, which to me just sounds like, well, yeah, that's what a baseball person would think about, you know, quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, he's not part of a pitching rotation. Like, this is by far the most important position in the sport. And if you don't have a guy who you think you can trust to at least start, then you're not going anywhere. And if you do have a guy who's starting quality, guess what? That's what the price tag is, even if you don't think the metrics, you know, prove that they're worth it. But I'm interested in your guys' thoughts because, look, I mean, okay, so Fitz wants somewhere around there, 16 a year. I mean, Bradford's making basically $22 million over like the next year and a month or something like that. You have Brock is making what, something like now 19 a year down in Houston. I'm interested in Mark and James, your guys' thoughts about Fitzpatrick and what he's worth given the contracts you guys just signed.
So with Fitzpatrick, he's in a real interesting spot, unlike kind of Brock and like Kaepernick and RG3. Fitz is at the end of his career. He's already made enough money where he doesn't have to go out and like talk to the Moneyball guys in Cleveland and say, "Hey, I'm trying to get a competitive bid against the Jets. Do you guys want to throw me $10 million? Like, if Cleveland backed a truck up to Ryan Fitzpatrick's house, you know, it might have to be a second truck for him to consider going there outside of New York, just because it, you know, it's not worth it to him at the end of his career there. The gap with him and what the Jets are offering him looks to be about $10 million. And I know Sitko and I went back and forth last year on, I would rather have, you know, Brian Hoyer and $10 million to pay another player than I would for Sam Bradford. You know, obviously we traded Fitzpatrick to the Jets and he grossly outperformed Brian Hoyer. But, you know, they're going to find a middle ground, because we've already mentioned there aren't a lot of suitors for NFL quarterbacks right now. Fitzpatrick, he's good enough to be a starter, and so he's looking for starter money. But the teams that would be in a position to pay him, you know, $15, $16 million, either already have a quarterback and are kind of set and would only be looking to bring him in as a backup and then make the, you know, $6, $7 million backup money, or developing a quarterback like, you know, Buffalo wouldn't be a horrible fit just because, you know, there's another place that needs a quarterback. But I don't think Ryan up there is going to bail on his new Tyrod Taylor toy, and, you know, to bring back Fitzpatrick and, you know, try and win this year.
I think it's really interesting what you say there, Nick, of like, what is now the going price of a starting quarterback? And I think it is something over $10 million. I think if you're starting under $10 million, that you're getting ripped off, man. If you're a starting quarterback in the NFL, there's only 20 of those people on earth that like really deserve it. You should get at least $10 million a year to start. If some team believes you're the starter, like Kaepernick going to the Browns, like you're coming in and we're going to make you the starter, yeah, you got to pay me at least $10 million in my book. And so Fitzpatrick, to me, I think it's a very interesting thing of where this money goes and all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, we freak out so much. And, you know, who, in some ways, who cares? He is worth, I think, at least $16 million. I would sign that. But I think what's happening, Andrew's dead on right. They just know the market and they're playing the demand. I think he's worth $16 million. But if they can get him at $14 million, get him at $14 million. That's good business. You know, get him at $12 million, which they may even get him down that low. But I do think Fitzpatrick is worth a little more than that. And I think if he had done better for them and made the playoffs, he would have definitely gotten that money and more so. You know, so it really came down to one game that he's missing and he doesn't have the leverage. But if he had won and gotten to the playoffs, and if he had won a playoff game, he'd be getting paid $20 million this year. So, you know, it's very, these lines are very fine. I think a starting quarterback is at least $10 million. Middle of the road is somewhere in the high teens. And then a great quarterback is getting up close to $20 million, right? And even more. And what we saw with Bradford, it's a very, just to explain that situation, he was on the leverage of, they were going to franchise him at about 20, a little more than $20 million a year. They didn't want to do that. So by giving him a little bit more to $22 million, they get him for 2 years. And if they want to pay him, it's going to average out to $18 million if they keep him the second year, $18 million a year, which is what you should pay an above average quarterback. And they believe he can be that. But if he isn't, they'll just cut him. And they cost him $22 million, which is a little more than the franchise tag. So adding those couple million above 20 was just so that they got that second year option, which I think is very valuable when you're trying to rebuild a team. And they're now going to bring in Chase Daniels, as you see, to teach a new system. And they're going to draft a quarterback. And so they, you know, they're in a position there for that whole thing to go down. But yeah, I think the situation, I think Andrew hit it on the head. It's just that they're playing him against the market. They know the market better than Fitzpatrick and his agent, and they've won this game. They've totally won.
I got to jump in one more time. I just think it's important for how teams sometimes, because it's all about business, but sometimes you just got to watch how you treat players. And I know it was not too long ago that we were making fun of the Jets and, you know, they were bad and made fun of their moves and their front office and everything. But, you know, this is a guy who, I just got to repeat, almost got them to the playoffs. And now the Jets, while it's smart and very businesslike to be like, you know, Fitzpatrick, you're only worth this amount of money. Two things with Brock Osweiler. Fitzpatrick has seen Brock Osweiler play whatever it is, seven games, and make more money, way more money than he's being offered right now. And at the same time, whether it's true or not, you know, I can't figure it out. It seems like it's true. Osweiler left the Broncos because of how he was treated. You know, he was benched. So I don't, if somebody ends up getting close to the range, and in all honesty, I feel like Fitzpatrick is going back to the Jets, but I think they're kind of, you know, it's not playing with fire. It's not like he's Tom Brady or whatever, but there's something to be said about how you treat players, especially a quarterback, especially one who almost got you to the playoffs, and they just, they could lose him, and I think it'd be a mistake.
No, totally. Just well, to I, say, Ryan, I think it's a great point. That's what happened with Dawkins with us. We had Dawkins, my favorite Eagle of all time. We offered him a contract. We weren't willing to negotiate. He felt offended. He went, and Denver offered him a little more money, but we probably could have countered, but he never came back to ask us. He left as soon as somebody else offered him more money. And the Eagles fan base never forgave Banner for that. And so I totally agree with you. Uark, that is a great point. You do have to treat the right person right. And maybe the Jets are being a little cocky here, even though they are, you know, in the Trump definition of what's good in the world, they're doing the best they should. I just wanted to say I agree with you, Ryan.
Well, in terms of the other bidders, I mean, we've talked about Cleveland, and there are a few that are going to be picking at the top of the draft, and it's kind of obvious these are the teams that need a quarterback more than any other, but they're also, again, guys that are going to be able to probably draft one of the young guys in the draft that they want. But there are other teams out there, like the 49ers that I bet would like somebody else, and the Broncos. I mean, honestly, the Broncos can't go into September 1st, the beginning of the league, with Sanchez. I mean, if they do that, they are the Texans last year. Sorry, James, but I mean, you know, great defense with obviously backup level quarterback play. And, you know, so if you're the Broncos as well, like, why would you not? I mean, apparently they're also not really willing to pay subpar quarterbacks, but why not outbid for Fitzpatrick? Because you're picking at the bottom of the first. You're not going to get anybody who's ready in the draft. So why not give Fitzpatrick $16 million for also another short, prove it deal sort of thing, in a bridge deal. He's going to bridge you over to your next Brock Osweiler you're not going to pay and let go.
What's so interesting about Fitzpatrick, according to Andrew, Fitzpatrick and Osweiler have the same agent. So I wonder if there's some bitter grapes going on between John Elway and the agent, and he's just kind of sworn off all of his players now.
Interesting.
Maybe. Well, so there's a bunch of other guys that are still out there that I just wanted to touch upon. It does seem like basically every team could use at least one more defensive lineman, one more offensive lineman. And that, interestingly, that is sort of the bulk of what's left in terms of the high-end free agents that haven't been signed yet. Just looking at the O-line, you got Andre Smith, Russell Okung, Kelvin Beachum, Donald Penn, all tackles, and also guard Evan Mathis. Are any of those guys that you think your team should be calling? I mean, especially you, Dan. I mean, it sounds like you guys could probably sign all of those guys.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of crazy that of all the years to be silent in free agency, that this is the year. The Colts are dying to get an offensive line, at least according to anybody that has a half a brain. So, I don't know. It's crazy that you would think that the Colts would reach out, especially after letting Freeman go. You think they would reach out to some of these offensive linemen. I don't know. But to touch on the quarterbacks a little bit, I don't know. Like Fitzpatrick seems like the perfect fit for a team like Denver that just needs a holdover quarterback to take Denver, who had arguably one of the worst quarterback situations last year. I mean, it would be a perfect fit for Fitzpatrick to go to Denver. You know, give him a quarterback that's used to throwing to big names like he did last year with Marshall and Decker. I mean, it's a perfect fit for Denver. I don't know why they're dragging feet trying to sign him for anything, you know, less than $16 million a year. What's the deal? I don't know.
Am I wrong? Or because I completely agree Fitzpatrick, you know, would be a good fit in Denver, but is most of the Fitzpatrick to Denver talk like only talk? Because I feel like I've seen almost no reports that actually link them. And again, I could be wrong, but you see Kaepernick, apparently Glennon now, and obviously they traded for Sanchez, but is any of the Fitzpatrick stuff real, as in, you know, what the Broncos are actually looking to do?
I've heard is Denver's not willing to pay him starter money. They want to pay him, you know, less than $10 million a year to come to Denver to play quarterback, but that's nuts. Like, I mean, they were paying Peyton, what, $18, $20 million a year last year to just basically call the plays from behind the line of scrimmage. Like, you get a veteran leader in there, they're going to be a legit quarterback. Throw the football to, you know, Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders. Seems like a perfect fit to me.
I wonder if it's just the pressure is totally off of that team because they won a Super Bowl. and they know they've just won. Peyton is just retired. Like, everything is great. And so they know that it's time that they need to get a young quarterback, and they're gonna have some time to do it. And even if it isn't this draft, they want to build as much as they can. And then, you know, even if Sanchez bridges them for a year, and then they can just find they draft next year. I don't know. I'm wondering if it's just that. The pressure's not on them, and they're not looking for a Band-Aid, because they're not in that, like, we got to win now. They're like, we just won it. We're not looking for another Band-Aid old quarterback. Let's start again, get somebody fresh and young. But obviously, they don't want to get somebody in there fast enough to take advantage of that defense. But is that defense already going to fall apart? Maybe they see that. Maybe Elway is that smart to see this defense will not be able to do next year what it did this year. And so we are at the beginning of a rebuilding. Let's go to find that young quarterback as we also try to keep this defense alive and kicking.
I mean, I can see that, but I feel like if they're going to rebuild and play for, like, look, I mean, we know we're not going to be back into the big dance next year. It's going to be 2-3 years from now if we do things right. Then why not, you know, cut DeMarcus Ware? Why not, you know, get rid of some of these guys that are probably playing in their last season but are taking up huge chunks of your cap and start that rebuild now? It seems like instead they've just been wanting to have things both ways. I mean, like, they had a whole bunch of free agents all leave them, basically, you know, everybody, I mean, who they didn't franchise tag, you know, in the case of Von Miller. But and then Elway sort of trying to explain that to the media, then turned around and said, oh, well, you know, we're focused on, like, you know, bringing in players that want to be here. It's like, well, it's not about bringing in players that want to be there. You got outbid on all these guys. And either way, I mean, if that's really the case, if it's clearly that all these guys just don't want to be there, well, it's just like basically anybody who is not under contract is fleeing. That's also not a good look. I don't know. I feel like, I mean, I think Elway has done a great job with that team over the last several seasons, but it seems like now maybe they're just trying to be too cute and just letting it fall apart. I don't know. Out of just, you know, just thinking that they're smarter than the market.
It is interesting. It's like they have a, just real quick, it's like they either have a master plan or their whole plan has just kind of not worked at all. And I can't really figure it out at this point.
I mean, the Eagles have never won a Super Bowl, but for those of us that are on this podcast that have seen their team win a Super Bowl, I mean, this is exactly what happened to Gruden's Bucks, right? They won the Super Bowl. This is the first time I remember seeing that as a kid. You win the Super Bowl, and then all of your best players go and get the contracts of their lifetime to go play for some horrible team that'll never be competitive, but is going to pay them because they're a Super Bowl winner, you know? And that, I saw the Bucks team just totally fall apart after their Super Bowl run with Gruden. And this team that Dungy had built was just decimated by free agency. And is that what's happening with the Broncos? And is this maybe just poor timing? You know, if you win the Super Bowl right when you maybe, like them, signed a bunch of guys and they're all on short contracts. I mean, maybe this is just par for the course, no?
I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that Elway didn't have a backup plan for Peyton retiring and Osweiler walking. Because yeah. He had the situation thinking, well, if Peyton wants to play another year, that's fine. We can, you know, we can do something and, you know, bring in another backup. We've already won the Super Bowl with him this past year. And then he's like, and even if Peyton walks, well, we'll just sign Osweiler. He's going to want to play here because, you know, he's been here for 4 years. He owes us for mentoring him with Peyton. And, you know, when it started to look bad, the Broncos Twitter feed actually put out a thing that said, you know, and this is before Osweiler even signed with Houston, saying the Denver Broncos just won the Super Bowl with the second worst quarterback play in the NFL. Only the Rams were worse. So it might just be Elway's own hubris getting in his way on this whole quarterback thing.
That is what it sounds like. Well, I want to get to, you know, have us move on a bit and get to some of these other defensive free agents that are out there. Because there's a lot of big names. I mean, I imagine, you know, Dan is interested in bringing some of these guys over for visits to the Colts. I mean, there's a lot of guys here that I think could help a lot of teams. You have, in terms of safeties, you have both Eric Weddle and Reggie Nelson still hanging out there. You have, cornerback Patrick Robinson, Courtney Upshaw as a pass rusher, although he's really more of a run guy, Terrence Knighton, and in terms of D tackles with absolutely no red flags whatsoever, you have both Greg Hardy and Nick Fairley there. So which of these guys do you think actually still has potential to make some money, or are these all guys going to be just sitting out on the market till someone gets injured? I mean, what do you guys think about this crop of dudes that's left?
Upshaw is definitely a guy that it sounds like Indy's interested in. By interested in, I mean, you know, they're going to wait a few more days to bring him in. But, like, safety, I don't know if you guys pay attention much to the mock drafts I've been doing, but I'm reaching hardcore for one of these safeties. It seems like they're interested in bringing in these stopgap safety guys. So Weddle seems like a perfect fit as a, you know, 2-3 year answer to the safety position for the Colts. So Upshaw, he's a guy that can come in and fill a need, right? Like, they need a run-stopping outside linebacker for sure. So, I mean, it's definitely something that I would figure the Colts are interested in. They have some money to spend. I mean, not a ton, but enough to bring in, you know, 2 or 3 guys that can make an immediate impact for that Colts defense that's struggled for the last, I don't know, 2-3 decades.
Let's all hope Greg Hardy doesn't get signed to anybody, just so the world is all right. As far as some of the big guys, I think Potrow still has plenty left in him, honestly. You know, Knighton was my favorite defensive player when he was with the Jaguars. If anyone even remembers, that's where he started. He was good with the Broncos. He seems like he was still decent with the Redskins. I think he still has something left. And I want to throw out one guy who you didn't mention because he's not, I don't know, he's not really well known. And he'll be like a late signee, I imagine, if he signs somewhere. But a guy named Akeem Hicks, he used to play with the Saints. Anytime I watch the Saints, I swear he made a play. He was with the Patriots last year, and he was pretty decent as far as I could tell. So I think whatever team gets him is going to get a good player at a really affordable deal.
Dibs.
I think the defensive linemen are really stuck because this draft is so deep at defensive linemen. None of those guys are going to sign a contract until after the draft. The other guys, we're just hitting that tier where now it's like cheap, you know, it's bargain hunting, right? The next couple of weeks are going to be the worst, you know, people are going to sign much more reasonable contracts. And so unfortunately for these guys who are out there, the teams are just waiting to the point that they're desperate and hungry. And I really think that's why we've seen this gap even since Thursday, and there haven't been many signings. We really are getting into the bargain center.
That's a great point. Chris Long, we didn't mention. Anybody want Chris Long? I don't know.
I mean, for cheap, I'd be interested. Cheap. Yeah. For sure. He's a good guy.
Yeah, well, and I think I Reggie Nelson is a guy who doesn't get talked about enough. I mean, probably because he's 32. I mean, he's not a young player with, you know, I guess he's already slowing down a bit, but he had 8 interceptions last year. I mean, he tied for the NFL league lead with Marcus Peters. That's the reason why I know that. It's because he was the one guy, I mean, still the best, you know, I think the best rookie season for at least the Chiefs Marcus Peters had. But look, I mean, this guy had 8 interceptions. I mean, I don't know. I bet he's just asking for a lot of money or something. But, dude, if the Chiefs have enough left in the bank, I'd love them to give him a call.
Anyone have a guess where he started his career as well?
Well, if you're asking me, I'm going to say...
It's depressing, really. But anyway, sorry. Continue.
Well, it's actually... So that doesn't make
Jacksonville's like a black hole of talent that prevents people from experiencing their full potential?
You know, that's a really well said phrase. That's all.
Is that just the state of Florida? Is that just a definition for the state of Florida?
That's how we roll.
Well, actually, that transitions nicely into what I wanted to do next, which is just talking to each of you guys, you know, and bring up, you know, sort of everything that our teams have done. You know, we're the super fans. We've had all sorts of wish lists. We've been thinking about this stuff probably way too much for any type of sane person over the last several weeks. And now, you know, the chips have come down. The cards have been played. And how do we think our teams individually did? And I want to start with you, Ryan, because your team made the first big blockbuster deal of as soon as as soon as free agency was totally opened up, it seemed like. So how do you feel that the Jacksonville has approached free agency and your big cash spending year?
I think they approached it pretty well. I wouldn't say great. You know, we got the number one free agent, and we got a Prince, and we got some Ivory. So that's a pretty good haul. I was disappointed that we didn't get a pass rusher. But a couple things on that. So first, let me Malik Jackson, you know, seemed like the unanimous number one guy. So we had the most money, and we just said, take all the money and come to our team. So I do like to see a free agent who is young and who is ascending. I think that's the perfect time, you know, to get in on somebody. So hopefully it works out. You know, being a super fan, I'm just going to say it will, just because I'm hopeful. But, you know, he's not going to be a star. He's not a pass rusher exactly. And, you know, it's not a J.J. Watt or anything. But looking at the other moves, we got Tashawn Gibson, a sorely needed safety. Last year we tried to sign a safety, didn't work out. I do think Gibson is better. Again, I don't know how great he is, but he is an upgrade at what we have. Prince Amukamara, we have on a one-year prove-it deal, which is nice. And Chris Ivory, we paid him too much money, but he is a personal favorite of mine, and he's younger than I thought. He's 27. I know he had some injury problems. He's not going to be the main guy, so while he's overpaid, who isn't in free agency? You know, he's just a personal favorite of mine. He's going to be the number two running back. Overall, I'm disappointed we didn't get like a Bruce Irvin or Olivier Vernon. That being said, apparently, even though we have all this money, and this actually makes me a little happy, basically Vernon's guaranteed money got to a point that our GM, Dave Caldwell, just said that it was way too high, and they bowed out pretty, not early, but once it got to a certain point, they just weren't even going to compete because they said, hey, this is too much money. And I respect that. You know, even though we have all the money in the world to throw around, if they don't think that he's worth it at that high a price, you know, I like hearing that. So overall, I would say pretty good. Pretty good.
Do you think you're closing the gap with James here in the division?
The thing is, no. Honestly, we'll be not the sexiest pick because I feel like that might be the Raiders to really make a jump up. You know, we'll be mentioned every now and then. I need to see it consistently on defense because obviously our offense hit a huge stride this year and that was nice. But pass rush is a huge question. We basically have Dante Fowler Jr. and that's it. And he's still a rookie because he's coming off an injury. And it's going to be nice. We have Fowler. We have Cedric Marks, who will be coming back, and Malik Jackson and Jared Audrick. And that, you know, that's a really – those are some studs on the defensive line, you know, we imagine with Fowler. And we also imagine with Jackson, honestly. You know, he looks good. The linebackers is still a weird, weak issue. Poslesny is good, but he's older. Telvin Smith is really nice. And then we have Dan Scuda, but he's just a guy. And the secondary seems to always disappoint, even though we have some decent players. So I need to see it. And I don't know if there's a clear-cut favorite next year for the South, which is nice because you don't know what you'll get with the Colts. And even though I was pretty down on the Texans last year, they made the playoffs and I would guess maybe they're the favorite this year, which is weird to say when Andrew Luck's on the other side. My inclination so far is it's not definitely no, but I don't feel it yet. I'm not ready to go that far.
Well, what do you say, James? Are you ready to take the title again?
Well, we're ready to not give it back to Indianapolis. They're going to have to take it back from us. We talked around it, I guess, a little bit. Obviously, the big signing for us is Brock Osweiler. So people were not too excited once they saw, you know, 4 years, $72 million. How can you be given this, you know, guy with only 7 career starts, $18 million a year? I was a little nervous myself. The full contract details came out. The first 2 years, we get rid of 31 of the $37 million guaranteed. So if we want to part ways after 2 years, it's only going to cost us a $6 million dead money hit. I don't want us to have to part ways after, you know, the 2 years. I'd like to see the whole contract go itself out, you know, get an extension on that too from some good play. But it's nice that they've built in kind of this backdoor, this escape plan if it doesn't work out. He's only costing us $12 million this year against the cap, so it's not even like we're overpaying him this year. As we've all talked about what a starter should be going for. the biggest disappointment was a similar disappointment to last year. We lost two of our offensive linemen, one to you, Mark, and Brandon Brooks. And we also lost our center, who was a converted guard, in Ben Jones. So it's going to be the third straight year that we're going to be working on a new center. Maybe it won't be that big of a deal since we also have a new quarterback. So, hey, they can learn everything together. That'll be great. And then we brought in Jake Allen to shore up our offensive line. And, of course, the other big offensive weapon signing was Lamar Miller. That's very exciting. He's ideally in the same vein of Arian Foster, who obviously we had to cut, wrong side of 30. That wasn't, fun to see happen, but from a business side, you kind of saw it happen or saw it coming anyway. Hopefully Lamar Miller can turn into the type of back that Miami refused to use him as, which was, 20 to 25 touches per game. We still have Alfred Blue. I hope we still go after some more offensive weapons in the draft to help win while our defense is as strong as it is. We're not going to be we have the potential to be a world-class defense or, number one in the history of the NFL defense, just like Denver was this past year. But as long as we can get some good offensive weapons, we don't have to have that much pressure on the defense to have them win us the games. Maybe the offense can actually win a couple for us this year.
Well, I feel like you guys did as good as any other team did in terms of just addressing, this is what we need to do. This is what we need to, these are the spots we need to fill in order to move on as move forward as a franchise, and just nailed them on day one with each of those, with Miller and Osweiler. How do you feel about this regime overall?
I'm happy with them. They do a very good job of structuring contracts so that we don't end up in these Denver Broncos situations where we have a mass exodus. Part of that is that we don't have an abundance of players that are prone to mass exodus. So maybe if we would go out and win several playoff games or win the Super Bowl, we would see that mass exodus. But obviously we have Watt locked into a big contract. This year we only had two players, Brooks and Jones, that were significant contributors that had their rookie deals end. We let them walk. I'm real happy. We're never really facing a crisis where, oh, God, we have two players that we really need to keep. Who are we going to franchise and who are we going to risk losing to free agency? So they do a great job of planning for the future.
Well, and just to round out the division, I want to go over to Dan. Dan, for a long time, you guys have been used to just dominating this division. And yet it seems like the wheels have been falling off for like the last couple of years. And they're really, it looks like you guys need help all over the place. I mean, how do you feel about how free agency has gone so far overall? And what do you think still needs to be addressed?
So, yeah, like the Colts for the longest time have been in this position where they have the best quarterback in the league. Might be a stretch, but for argument's sake, let's go ahead and call it. They've had the best quarterback in the league for 10, 15 years, whereas Andrew Luck came in and turned the team around completely. Peyton Manning did the same back in his day. So they don't really get a chance to rebuild through the draft. So they need to take advantage of signing the right guys in free agency. And they made some reaches in the past where they've gone ahead and signed guys that maybe didn't deserve the contracts that they did because they're in such a hurry to win the Super Bowl with the right free agent signed. So it might be a good sign that they're finally taking a step back in free agency and ignoring some of these bigger contracts. But at the same time, we've seen it in Denver where if you go out and sign the right guys, you're going to make a pretty big leap and put your name in the hat for Super Bowl contenders. So is it that they're not signing the right guys in free agency? Probably, but I don't know. Maybe this year they're kind of taking a step back and looking at it as a whole and seeing that, they needed a guy like Blaine Allen that they may or may not have overpaid rather than signing a guy like they did last year with Trent Cole where they overpaid him just to come over. So taking a step back in free agency might be the right answer. But, I mean, there's still so many holes on this team that have been developed over time where, they might not have an opportunity to draft a team to build around such a dominant quarterback play.
Well, and I'm interested in your thoughts on Dwayne Allen versus Kobe Fleener, because I don't have it in front of me, but as I remembered seeing, Fleener got significantly less money, and which leads one to suspect to suspect that both could have been kept, or that Fleener could have been brought in also for cheap, or you could have switched those guys around. I mean, what do you think about those two players?
Well, Fleener still got paid pretty well. I think he got a 5-year versus 4-year deal. And it still ended up being a little over $7 million a year. So like the Dwayne Allen fit was more what the Colts needed. Dwayne Allen can kind of block a little bit better than Kobe Fleener. And Kobe Fleener, if you look at some of his highlight reels, includes some pretty big, significant drops. Like, it might have been against the Texans, actually. James, maybe you can confirm this, but he had a wide-open touchdown last year. No one's around him, and he drops the ball. Like, Indianapolis is not a team that can just afford a big drop like that, especially in a division game. So, like, I was a huge fan of them signing Dwayne Allen over Kobe Fleener, especially if it was going to be the same amount of money.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Well, we've now gotten a really good sense of the AFC South. I want to take us over to the NFC. And first, before we get to you, Mark, I want to bring up Sam and I talked a little bit before the show, because he was on the road, about his Giants. And the Giants on the NFC side became the big dream team, as I'm sure they'll be happy to call themselves, because that works out well for everybody that does. But so let's go over and listen to Brian and see what he thinks about all these signings he's made. So we now go to our Giants superfan, who seems to be building the new York dream team. The Giants were sort of, at least I definitely was not expecting the Giants to be one of these big major players in free agency. But given the fact that the Giants seem to have a lot of holes all over the place, it was interesting to see a team really attack it the way that they did. Sam, you're the Giants superfan for us here, talking to us from the road. What were your thoughts on the way that your team really went out guns blazing into free agency?
You know, as much as you may disagree with the players that the Giants have signed, it's always nice to know at least your franchise is doing everything they can to build a better team to win the next Super Bowl. So I think the mindset, at least behind every single one of the moves, was, we're going to create the best team we can for now or the next 2 or 3 years, because that's all we have of Eli. And as we know in the league, you need a quarterback. So while we know who our quarterback is for the next 3 or 4 years in terms of person and quality, I think they're trying to move their chips to the middle of the table, saying we're going to try to win one more before he goes. And, you know, we'll worry about the cap implications 3 or 4 years from now. So, you know, as much as you want to start criticizing Jerry Reese, at least he's making the moves. That being said, I heard Craig Cosell on a podcast talking about how much he actually likes Olivier Vernon, so that kind of made me a little happier. He adds a little edge rush. You know, Steve Spagnuolo's kind of a magician. He will produce whatever he can from the pieces he's given. And now he's given some nice pieces with Olivier Vernon and Damon Harrison. And then you move to Janoris Jenkins, and you got to think that Spagnuolo and, to a larger extent, Jerry Reese and Bob McAdoo feel that the cornerbacks they need are the cornerbacks that are playmakers, because they're hoping to get quarterbacks going off their back foot a lot and really letting their cornerbacks make plays. So, you know, if everything goes right, the move will look really good. If everything goes wrong, I assume in 2 or 3 years we're drafting one or two. So we'll see what happens. It's an exciting time to be a Giants fan.
Yeah, it really does seem like you're trying to rebuild the old Giants defenses of sort of the early 2000s and the team that was so effective. But, I mean, on some of the individual moves, it does seem a bit strange to me that you guys are letting, you know, Robert Ayers go, and then you have the other guys coming in and kind of giving JPP an extended trial period. In terms of the individual guys, I mean, do the individual moves make sense to you?
You know, it's odd because a lot of the Giants' past success from their defensive ends have come from really prototypical 4-3 defensive ends. And honestly, I haven't watched Olivier Vernon that much, but it seems his best fit would be as a 3-4 outside linebacker. But they have to have seen something on tape that makes me believe that they think he can take the next step. I've seen him a couple of times. He's a good edge rusher. I don't really know how much else he has. The defensive tackle with Damon Harrison was great because we had a good run defense last year, and everybody says, I'm just watching Damon Harrison. He controls the middle of the line. He can get penetration. Maybe Steve Spagnuolo sees something where he can become a viable pass rush up the middle, which, you know, if, which know, a lot of analysts are pointing towards that as pressure up the middle on a quarterback is a little more effective than outside pressure because it's in his face. So, you know, if those two moves work out and those players, you know, reach to take the next step, because they're both kind of young, so if they take the next step, those moves are great. I believe in Damon Harrison, Olivier Vernon, it's really tough to get behind him in that contract, really, honestly, as a Giants fan, just because it's a lot of money to be given somebody who was the third best player on his line last year and really still didn't make much of an impact on a play-to-play basis.
I mean, do you think it would have made more sense just to go after your own guys in terms of Robert Ayers and Prince Mukamara, or do those guys, are they
100%.
Overvalued?
Yeah. 100%. I don't know. The truth is we won't know until we see what those guys signed for. I'm not sure. Honestly, it's I don't remember if they signed and what those contracts are, but you don't really know what those players were asking. So until we hear what comes out, you don't really know. If we could have gotten Prince Mukamara for, you know, 75% of what we paid for Janoris Jenkins, then I'd probably be in favor of that. Robert Ayers was kind of fool's gold because really nobody on the Giants pass rush was really affecting when it counted. So it's tough to really say they should have chased him.
All right, good stuff, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to call in. You're off to a wedding, right? Where are you headed to?
I'm on the way back from a wedding, and we're coming close to where I know to go right now, so Waze is actually calling my name. So I wish you well. Good luck on the draft, except for the third round. And
yeah, thanks.
We'll see you. I don't know if, yeah. Sorry about that. That was weird.
It happens. We'll be talking about that. And we're back. And so, you know, it was really the Giants in the NFC that made a lot of the big news early on with the free agent signings. But, I mean, there has been almost no team as intriguing. I mean, other than Broncos, who we talked a lot about, I mean, it's hard to find another team that is as intriguing as the Philadelphia Eagles right now in terms of the massive overhaul that team is going through with the massive trades of anybody that has ever, you know, spent more than 15 minutes in a room with Chip Kelly. And it's, you know, it's interesting from my perspective as well as the Chiefs super fan, because it is our former offensive coordinator that is leading the charge over there. And Doug Peterson, and I'm interested, Mark, in your thoughts about the Doug Peterson time machine and the de-chipification of the Eagles. You know, what, it's been a whirlwind. What do you think of it?
Yeah, totally. So just to like give context and perspective. So if anybody doesn't know who Howie Roseman is, he was our GM before Chip. And basically he has been an intern with the Eagles for years and years. And he like worked his way up, and Chip hated him because he wasn't a football guy. He's literally just like a smart little kid who like was really good at contracts, which clearly from what we've done this offseason, he's really good at contracts and trades and kind of manipulating the draft. But he's not like a football guy. So Chip kind of hated him. They had a falling out. I would point out, I think that Banner and Howie also had a falling out in part of Banner's departure. And then he kicks, you know, Howie loses the battle to Chip, so that Chip becomes GM, but they don't fire Howie. They just give him an office across the building from Chip's. And he, the whole year, I think, is there talking to Lurie and telling him to fire Chip. And eventually he gets what he wants and he comes back into power. So most of Philly hates Howie Roseman because they just think of him as like a weaselly kind of conniving, not a football guy kind of dude. Very not Philly. You know, he's like really good with money and finances and numbers. And Philly's just, you know, much more lunch pail. Like, we want to beat you in the face and, you know, that kind of attitude. You know, it's Philly. It's just not, we're not going to admire negotiation as our highest thing. I would say it's just not typical there. So people didn't really admire Howie, and they were really mad at him and loving Chip, and obviously a lot of friction and all this stuff. And whether you didn't like Chip or you wanted him gone, people still seem to hate Howie. And then he pulled off possibly just an incredible thing. So people say he's getting rid of everything Chip. I like the way Tommy Lawler phrased it. Tommy Lawler's a beat writer for the Eagles. He has a blog called Eagles Blitz. He's an amazing writer. Tommy's argument is that, no, he's not really getting rid of everything Chip. He's getting rid of all of Chip's biggest mistakes, which is very true. And the biggest mistakes were the contracts, and specifically three contracts. The Murray contract, he was getting paid $6 to $6.5 million a year. That's ridiculous for an old running back who can't get through the line anymore. I'm not saying he can't get 1,800 yards behind Dallas's perfect line, but he's not going to do that against anybody else's line. And he's not definitely not going to do that with the Titans. He may have a 1,000-yard year. I don't think we expect any. I wouldn't expect anything over maybe 12. But he, you know, 6 to 6.5 is a crazy contract. If we had cut him, it would have been $12.5 million in dead money this year. So he was basically uncuttable. The only way to get rid of that cancer, and he had become that. He was really an ornery dude as well behind the scenes. The only way to kind of get him out was to trade him. And I thought there was no one that would touch that contract after the long beatdown he had in Dallas, you know, that whole year they're grinding him out. And then he comes to us and he's clearly doesn't have it left. I'm not saying he can't get it back, but he was burnt up this year. That they took on that $6 to $6.5 million contract blows me away. I understand it's not for much. We just flip spots in the fourth round. But you know what? I would have given him to you for anything. You know, there was nothing just to take on that contract. It's like whatever we can get, great. And then Byron Maxwell, that might be the worst, but it's also just a really bad contract. $8.5 million to $10.75 million. I have no idea how Miami is paying him that and willing to pay him that. We made a horrible mistake. We needed cornerbacks bad. We paid him like a number one, and he's clearly not that. He is a starter in the NFL. Don't get me wrong. Byron Maxwell is a starting corner in the NFL, and that is difficult to be. But he's not worth that money. He's, you know, that's just a very high contract for him. So great to get out of that contract as well. And then Mark Sanchez is just golden to get out of that. That only saves $1 million. But, you know, still by trading him instead of cutting him, it saved $1 million. Go Howie. Awesome work. The Byron Maxwell one is fascinating because it gets us up into the top 10 of the draft. And kind of looking at this, a lot of people are jumping on. We're going to draft Ezekiel Elliott now. We're going to draft one of the quarterbacks. I think the way they looked at it is there's five really great players in the draft, and they're just trying to get closer to those five. And for me, those five, the top really two just clearly amazing players I think are going to be all pros for years are Bosa and Tunsil. I think those guys are crazy. If you don't know much about Tunsil, it's hard to study a tackle watching them. You know, you could watch a game or two. But if you want to see how great Tunsil is, just watch his combine. He's one of the few players you watch his combine. He looks like Gronkowski or something running around. And he's literally 6'5", 310. He's got like 50 pounds on Gronk. And he's not as athletic as Gronk, but he will remind you of that. Just a very large man who moves like a tight end, not a 310-pound man. So I think Tunsil's amazing. And then you have Miles Jack, Ramsey, and Buckner. To me, that's the top five. Bosa, Tunsil, Jack, Ramsey, and Buckner. And I think the Eagles are just trying to get up there, hoping one of them will fall, hoping somebody will take Goff and Wentz above them. For those people who are getting all excited about Goff and Wentz, I just want to put this in perspective. Goff and Wentz currently are rated below Jameis Winston, where he was at this time. So I don't think they're even Jameis Winston level. So just put that in perspective. Where would you take Jameis now, you know, in this draft? I don't think you take Jameis top 10. I don't think either of these guys are top 10 for me. I think Wentz is a major project. When I watch his games, the slowness of the defenses he's facing is funny. It's literally comedic. He throws balls up, his receiver stops, and the cornerback still doesn't catch up. It's like ridiculous. He just is playing in it. It's like watching a grown man play with boys. So yes, he may eventually be able to do that. But if you put him in game one, he would get destroyed in an NFL game. He floats the ball. There's just a lot of things with Wentz that I'm like, whoa, whoa. He may have all the skills and may be able to build, but that dude is not ready anywhere near it. Goff is almost ready. He looks good, but Goff has 9-inch hands. That's freaky small. That's really weird to me. And once again, he has flaws that I'm like, small. I don't know that it's top 10 pick. It's Trump small. He got little Trump freaky hands. No, I totally agree. So, yeah, I don't see the quarterbacks as high as they've risen. I see those guys. I'm hoping somebody else does, and that pushes some of the great players down. If none of the five fall to us, I would take Ronnie Stanley. I do think he's a starting tackle, but he is nowhere near where Tunsil is. People want Ezekiel Elliott, but I just don't really believe in taking him back that high. I do think he's incredible. I do think he'll be great. I'm kind of scared of Dallas taking him at 4. That could be ugly for years. And he does remind me of Emmitt Smith in a weird way. He's kind of small and compact like that, but always moving forward, always making great decisions. We will draft a quarterback. I think we're drafting a quarterback somewhere between rounds 3 and round 5.
Now to steal this a little bit, I mean, Sitka brought up a great point. I mean, DeMarco Murray and Maxwell were two, you know, maybe not the best players in the world to acquire, but if Indy goes out and acquires them, you know, they fill two needs at the same time, but turns out that maybe those weren't the best two guys to acquire. So that kind of goes back to trying to build a roster around Andrew Luck. It's tough to do, and obviously Indianapolis has struggled on that front.
I'd love to ask James about Brandon Brooks.
Go ahead.
I really like him, and he's by far the one free agent I'm excited about. We really needed a guard. He seems to be high quality. Can you tell me anything about Brandon Brooks? What did you think of him in Houston?
I loved him in Houston. I mean, one of the greatest things is, like, if you ask the average, you know, Texans fan, hey, can you know who's on the offensive line? Really, you're not going to find anybody who would be able to name Brandon Brooks just because he went out, he did his job. And typically the only time the casual fan knows an offensive lineman is because they're constantly committing holding calls or constantly letting their quarterback get blown up. So it's one of those cases where being invisible is actually a really good attribute. He was asked to step up. He just finished his rookie deal, so he's young. I think he's 26. He was definitely the one that I was more disappointed between him and Ben Jones losing him in free agency.
Yeah, we're really stoked to have him. He'll be great for us. Chase Daniels also makes a lot of sense just because he will train Bradford on the new offense, and he'll also train whoever we draft. So Chase is just a perfect backup and far, far more valuable than Sanchez would be. And then the other guys are all like, we've got a bunch of secondary guys and linebacker Nigel Bradham, which I do like all these guys. They're clearly Jim Schwartz guys who like to hit, and he's trying to bring a toughness to the defense, and hopefully that won't be a whole bunch of penalties.
Well, I think, James, you know, you guys lost Brooks, but I think you'll be happy with Jeff Allen, who you picked off from us. He was really one of the few bright spots on the Chiefs' O-line last year. And so just to actually to use this to transition a bit into the Chiefs, it's not too much to say, because honestly, you know, we talked about it a few weeks back in terms of what the Chiefs needed to do, and it was mostly just re-sign the core of their defense, and that's basically what they were able to accomplish. I was actually surprised they were able to sign as many guys as they did, bringing back, Barry's on the tag, but I'm sure they're going to sign a long-term deal with him at some point between now and July. You bring back DJ, you bring back Tom Bahali, and they even got Jay Howard, who I thought was a total goner. And they didn't get Sean Smith, but I mean, I think that had been sort of written on the wall for almost, you know, ever since the season ended, basically, was that, yeah, this guy's going to go get the big payday. And he did. And it sucks that he's going to the Raiders. But, you know, I'm happy the Chiefs were still in a bidding war with the Raiders, and they probably made them overpay for him like they have for several of our free agents over the past several years. And the really amazing thing was I figured that, you know, with just even getting those guys, it would be difficult for us to wiggle in any additional help anywhere else, especially on the O-line where we need it. But the fact that we're able to get tackle Mitchell Schwartz, who's really is one of the top tackles on the market, and he's young, we get him to a 5-year deal. I was blown away by that. That was a huge. That's going to be a huge deal, because now, I mean, Eric Fisher's gotten better. He's solidified himself on the left tackle spot. We haven't had a right tackle with any consistency for several years now. We now have a right tackle, and we have enough pieces on the interior offensive line. I mean, I'm sure we'll draft a guy or bring in another veteran, but more or less, the fact we have enough pieces there that, and we have the bookends that the offensive line is not going to be a disaster to start the year, which it was last year. So it was a weird day in terms of free agency, because it was, we got everything we wanted more or less, and then just had like the totally out of nowhere sucker punch from the NFL in their penalty for supposedly tampering with Jeremy Maclin last year. And the penalty is a third rounder this year and a sixth rounder next year. So apparently what the issue was, I mean, according to them, is that the Chiefs, during this somewhat legal tampering period, they tampered by speaking directly to Jeremy Maclin over the phone rather than just his agent. And that is a no-no. Our owner, Clark Hunt, immediately came out and said that, look, I mean, this is, you know, the league has not been enforcing this with any type of consistency, and this this punishment's totally arbitrary and excessive. And I'm definitely agree. I'm not going to flip out and go all, you know, Patriots land Deflategate, but it all sorts of things about this just seem strange to me. A, I would be amazed if this is not common practice in the league, that, you know, during this period of time, particularly when you're allowed to tamper, essentially, that there's not some conversations between the teams and the actual players, especially when in the case of Andy Reid and Jeremy Maclin, who are like legit bros off the field. Of course, they're going to have some sort of conversation during that time. And what difference does that really make? I mean, I guess the idea is that, you know, that they're not going through their professional representatives, and therefore a team might, you know, be able to dazzle a player more directly that doesn't know what he's doing. But these guys know how the negotiations go. They're smart enough to know their way around this. And well, anyways, yeah, so we're going to appeal it. But the other big thing about it is, if you're going to slap this big penalty on a team for that kind of you know, crossing the line in terms of tampering, why do you do it once free agency's already begun? Why don't you do it before that legal tampering period begins again this year? Because now, I mean, it'd be one thing if they were doing, like, we're making an example out of the Chiefs, now don't do this during the tampering 2 days. But they didn't do that. And so I'm sure there's going to be five more teams that are going to get some sort of penalty next year.
And that's a great point.
They could have just been warned. But anyways, it was Mark, you know, it was your team that we illegally and disgracefully took a player from. So what are your thoughts on this?
No, totally. I think it's fascinating, man. I agree with you completely. I think that stuff happens all the time. Just this free agency, when we got Brandon Brooks, when his press conference, he said one of the major reasons he came to the Eagles is because Jason Peters, Kelsey, and Lane Johnson were all texting him saying that they're going to start a great D offensive line together. So that's, to me, very similar, you know? And maybe the players are allowed to do it, and the difference is that it was Andy. But the problem is that Andy drafted Maclin. They're close friends, you know? Like, the fact that they probably talk all the time. You know, I would bet that. I think Andy's close to a lot of players. And so I totally agree with you. I think this is a ridiculous rule. I don't think you should be in trouble. But on the other side, the reason I'm not mad at you, but I'm mad at the league, is if they're going to take those draft picks from you because we got, like, hurt, give us those draft picks. I want that third rounder. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So basically the rule is, oh, you screwed this team over, we're going to punish you. But, oh, that team that got screwed, oh, too bad. Like, what? Like, give us those picks. I don't, that rule doesn't make any sense to me. If they're going to take those picks from you, those are our picks. I want them in exchange for Maclin. That's why I'm furious. I have a beef with the league. But at the beginning of the day, I don't think you guys should be, definitely not a third rounder. I think maybe a fifth, you know, like you say, a slap on the wrist to show. Not that that's a slap on the wrist, but, you know, a minor punishment. But a third rounder, especially in this year's draft, that's a major punishment to me. I think there's going to be good players still on the board at the end of the third.
Are we sure that this wasn't somehow the Patriots' fault?
I'm pretty sure it has to be the Patriots' fault somehow, right? I mean, yeah. I mean, speaking of the Patriots, the other interesting side on this that I didn't mention is that it was interesting. You know, you had Spygate and Deflategate, which, you know, are both against, you know, the Patriots, and their ownership, Robert Kraft, apparently is really close to the commissioner. And it's a similar thing with Kansas City, in that Clark Hunt, he's like the chairman of like half of the ownership committees. And he's not as like as big of a like kind of visible presence like Robert Kraft is, in terms of one of the big owners and all that kind of stuff. Probably just because the Chiefs are small market and haven't won a big game in a long time. But you know, it's interesting that these are the teams that are getting knocked really hard. I think Goodell almost might even amplify some punishments when it comes to a team where everyone knows this guy is well-respected and influential. So if we're going to hit them, we got to hit them even harder. I don't know. But I will say, though, you know, about the whole idea that, you know, the Eagles should get the picks, I'd be okay with that. And quite frankly, the other reason why I'm not more angry about this is if, you know, Maclin was still under contract with you guys last year and we acquired him in a trade last, you know, during last year's offseason, where we had to give you a third rounder, a 2016 third rounder and a 2017 sixth rounder, like, I'd still totally worth it. Oh, I mean, I would
a steal. You know, that is a deal. Yeah, no, exactly. No, us losing Maclin was a really big blow. And I'm glad he went to Andy, and I'm glad he's doing so well for you. He's a great guy. I have nothing bad to say about Maclin, but it was hard, you know. And I understand he got paid $11 million a year. I'd take that money too.
I think for the conspiracies in general with the NFL, we're giving them way too much credit for being just smart enough to enforce, you know, silly little rules like this, or be just smart enough to punish certain owners a little bit more than others, and yet be dumb enough to let things like this go on. I'm more than happy to just side on the fact that there are a lot, they're just kind of making it up as they go, and like, oh yeah, this is a rule, we should probably do something about this, and kind of reacting as opposed to having grand conspiratorial plans on how he's going to get back at somebody versus, you know, another team.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's one of the rules, though, that just gets flagrantly violated constantly to the point that teams basically ignore it. And so they had to just make an example out of somebody, it seems like. It's like, oh, well, this one we're pretty sure. And apparently also they just asked like Andy Reid and everyone at the Kansas City side and Jeremy Maclin for their phone records. And unlike Tom Brady, they didn't immediately destroy their phones. They just, oh, yeah, sure, handed it over. And so therefore that they like handed over the proof. They're like, yeah, we don't think we did anything wrong, but here you go, phone records. And so then they come back with all the, you know, the picks. So I don't know, maybe the lesson out of this is just don't cooperate, quite frankly.
We'll see if Brady, I was seeing things today that there's thoughts that Brady may still face suspension. We'll see. I don't think it's good to mess, you know, to hold out. We'll see. You know, heaven help us.
Yeah, so well, we've run very long, but there's a lot to talk about in the league right now. I mean, there's these dead zones of the off season where we have nothing to say, and it's been an exciting week. It's been a fun week, and the balls are still all rolling. And so I'm really happy we had this time to talk, and I hope all of you out there enjoyed it. To get even more of your NFL fix. Dan, how does someone, apply to get some sort of a contract to play for the Colts if they want to go through you?
Well, if they want to go through me, all they have to do is apply. It's pretty easy to get a job with the Colts these days, but you can also hit me up on Twitter at, Dynasty by Luck. That's Dynasty by Luck on Twitter.
And Mark, if anyone wants to discuss, Howie Roseman leadership skills, where would be the best place for them to do that with you?
At Sitko77, Sitko77 on Twitter. That's the best place. Yeah, please come follow. Fun.
And for the massive giant wave of Jags Nation that wants to get involved with Ryan's conversation and sit next to him in the in-stadium pools, where can they get a hold of you there, Ryan?
That's right. You can't stop the Jags train from just rolling. Too many fans, but all those fans can reach me on Twitter at @RyanM_DrHands.
Dr. Hands. Interesting. Okay. Well, and for all the Houston love, James, how can our fans get in touch with you?
You can reach me at @Boiler_James.
And I am at Clayton Nicholas on Twitter. For anyone wanting to talk a little smack or give a little praise to the Chiefs or tell us that we're all big cheaters. Or if you're Monty, it's just where he spouts his normal delusions every day. So, you know, keep him coming, Monty. Anyways, this has been Next Fan Up. And there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.
Yeah, no, I think you're dead on right there with that, James. I think you bring up interesting things there, Nick. You were talking about, sorry, it's my dog there running off.
I was hoping that was your dog, not you.
I thought that was Dan violently disagreeing.
Yeah.